Welcome to our KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast Series, delivering fresh insights and perspectives around major accounting and financial reporting developments on ESG reporting. We thank you for joining today.
Welcome back to our ESG reporting update. I can't believe it, but it's been about 3 months since our last episode. And given the fast-paced nature of the ESG reporting space, I'm sure you all know that there's a lot for us to cover today. My name is Bryce Earhart. I'm a managing director in our Department of Professional Practice, where I really specialize in helping U.S. companies sort through this challenging regulatory reporting space. I'm joined by my colleagues, Anita Chan and Julie Santoro, who leads our ESG activities in our Department of Professional Practice. Okay, so let's dive in. And we're going to start with the SEC. At the time of our last episode, we were still actually anticipating the final rule. And if we fast forward to today, we've seen the release of that rule and a subsequent stay to that rule by the commission. Now, we'll discuss that stay in a little bit, but first, let's discuss the rule at a very high level. And there's essentially three main areas of the rule. The first includes disclosures in the financial statements that are related to severe weather events, and also some disclosures around carbon offsets or renewable energy credits. Now, what's important to acknowledge here is that since these disclosures are in the financial statements, they will be in scope of one's internal control over financial reporting. Now, the next two areas, these are included in a registrant's annual report or a registration statement. One of them includes disclosures related to material scope 1 and scope 2 greenhouse gas emissions, and that information is going to be subject to assurance for certain registrants. The other includes what we call TCFD-like disclosures, and these include certain disclosures associated with a registrant's governance, strategy, and also risk management of climate risks. Okay, so Anita, let me bring you in here. Even though we saw that final rule, we also saw that stay that I just referred to. Can you help our listeners understand what that is?
Sure. So it's interesting because it's certainly not the first, but it's not common where the commission would issue a final rule and then follow on with something called a stay. And I think from a legal perspective, and the commission had made these points kind of clear when they announced this voluntary stay, is that they're not changing their view or perspective that they have authority over the climate rule and they stand by sort of what they have issued as final in this climate-related disclosure rule. But what it's intended to do is providing some sort of relief from a regulatory uncertainty perspective. Essentially, this is the period by putting the final rule in a stay format to allow everybody to focus on the litigation outcome that is taking place right now in our judicial system until that has some more clarity as to where the courts are landing before the rules officially go into full effect. So that's in a nutshell of sort of the intention of it, in that the commission really is still standing by the final rule, but giving some more time for everybody to wait for the courts to take the proceeding as they needed to.
Okay, thanks, Anita. So I think one thing that kind of struck me there is you mentioned that the SEC was intending to reduce some uncertainty around the rule being in effect. However, there's of course going to be some uncertainty around the judicial process working its way out. So given that there is still some uncertainty here, how do you think companies should really be approaching the SEC climate rule during this stay?
Yeah, it's interesting because we have been talking to a lot of companies as well to see whether the stay has potentially changed their sentiment or not. I think the key is really focusing on interoperability and the bigger picture in terms of the demand in our marketplace of climate-related disclosures globally, right? Many of our listeners are potentially in the space where global regulations like EU CSRD is at play for them. There's also California, which I know we'll be talking a little bit more as well. So even though the SEC came up with a stay, a lot of the required piece, like one of the components that you were talking about earlier, Bryce, where there's the TCFD-like disclosures, let's call those, there is no reason to really pause on the preparation of those disclosure. Certainly unique to the SEC rule is what you have mentioned as the ESSEC, the financial statement component requirements. But in my sort of dialogue and understanding is that many companies are still taking an approach of having a cautious and balanced implementation approach, meaning thinking through conceptually how, as written, the final rule would apply to them, how they can then think through what policies they might be setting, and then perhaps, if anything, they're going to table a little bit of sort of the actual execution and implementation of carrying out some of the, you know, notes to the financial statement type quantification calculations.
Great. Thanks, Anita. And yes, you dropped interoperability. We're going to come back to that topic in a little bit with Julie. But first, let's stay in the U.S., but pivot to a different topic, and that is the California laws. Now, in the interest of time, I'm not going to summarize what's included in those three separate laws, because Julie actually summarized those for us in our February episode. So if you're looking for that info, check out our February episode of our ESG Reporting Update podcast. Okay, Anita, I'm sticking with you here. Let's start with the Voluntary Carbon Markets Disclosure Act. For our listeners, that's essentially introducing disclosure obligations for voluntary carbon offsets and also for emissions reduction claims. Now, where we left it, Anita, in February was that there was some chatter that the effective date within the act of January 1st, 2024 was not actually the date that was intended. Do you have any updates here about it?
Yeah, nothing definitive, but at least some more clarity from this front is that an actual proposed amendment has been issued for moving the effective date from 1/1/24 to 1/1/25. So it did seem like the intention has been confirmed, but certainly until the proposal is fully fleshed out and confirmed, then, you know, currently as written is still 1/1/24.
Great. Well, that is some good news. All right, let's talk about those other two California laws. These ones are the ones that focus on disclosures around GHG emissions and also climate risks. When we last talked here, Anita, you mentioned that we were waiting on CARB to provide details around the implementation of these laws. Is there anything noteworthy to share here?
Yeah, certainly another exciting update. Not too long ago, Governor Newsom of California had proposed to include funds for CARB, the California Air Resources Board, to carry out the details of building out kind of how to execute on SB 253 and SB 261. It was encouraging because earlier there were no funding included in the January round of budget, but now in this May round, there's clear signaling that there's proposed budget in there. And I think based on our understanding, what's going to happen is that once the funding has been officially approved, CARB is going to have to build up their team, right, by hiring resources and then carry out a, you know, expected short period of notice and comment period of what they intended to build out for implementing with the details around SB 253 and 261. So more to come later in this year is what we're expecting, probably during the second half of 2024.
Great. Okay, thanks, Anita. Let's shift gears again now and let's talk about what's happening in Europe. And bear with me, I'm going to take this one. What I want to catch you up on is two things. The first being developments within the CSRD and ESRS space. And then secondly, I want to touch on the EU's Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive. And we'll start with the CSRD and ESRS. Now, with the CSRD, I'm sure many of you continue to see news articles around the delay of the adoption date for the ESRS sector specific and the reduced non-EU parent standards. There, what we had was a 2-year delay of the European Commission's adoption dates from essentially June 30th, 2024 to June 30th, 2026. That proposal has now been finalized. What's really important here that I want to emphasize is that you need to keep in mind that this is only a deferral of the time period for which the European Commission has to effectively finalize the standards. It does not impact the effective dates for companies. That includes the FY28 effective date for non-EU parent reporting. So my message here to you is really that your compliance dates stay the same. Your effective dates will essentially stay the same. They are not changing. Now, with that being said, if we shift into the ESRSs more specifically, EFRAG is still working through drafting those standards. What they're really focused on right now are those sector-specific standards. I know a lot of people are patiently waiting to see what those exposure drafts look like, but it appears that they're running maybe a little bit behind. We previously discussed how we were expecting at least some exposure drafts for high-impact sectors in the first half of 2024. We're quickly running up against the end of that timeline. And in their recent update in their work plan, they updated that to Q4 2024. So we're not really expecting to see anything there until later this year. And we're also still expecting exposure draft on those reduced non-EU standards in late 2024 or early 2025. Now, some of you may recall or may have seen that EFRAG is also working through developing implementation guidance that's really intended to support companies in their implementation efforts, right? And that process is still ongoing. A couple things to note is the double materiality assessment guidance and their value chain guidance is nearing completion. And when I say completion, I should be saying nearing finalization, essentially. So we are expecting those to be finalized either later this month or in June. And what's next there? It appears that EFRAG is starting to shift their focus to transition plans and developing some implementation guidance around that. However, they're in the early stages there, so I'm not expecting to see anything soon from there. Lastly, I want to touch on the Supply Chain Act that exists within Europe, that Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive. Now, you've probably seen a lot of news on this one as well. There's been a lot of back and forth on it, but the big takeaway right now is that the Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, it's been agreed by the Council of the EU and European Parliament. In effect, this is basically finalized at this point. There's still some formalities to go through, but what's important to note is that through that back and forth, the compromise text has made several concessions from the original proposal. And one of those concessions includes tripling the revenue threshold for non-EU companies from 150 million euros to 450 million euros. Okay, so that's all I have for you on the EU. And given that we've just discussed three different regulatory reporting initiatives, maybe now's a good time to go into interoperability. We know that interoperability between different sustainability frameworks is really a key issue for large organizations that have to comply with more than one framework. That's really because where disclosures are not aligned right, companies may have to report similar information in different ways, and that creates duplication. It creates unnecessary burden. Now, recently, the ISSB and EFRAG published a detailed bottom-up analysis of their general and also their climate-related disclosure requirements. I want to bring Julie in at this point to help us digest this information. So, Julie, what's your take on this recent body of work between the ISSB and EFRAG?
So, Bryce, yeah, I am extremely positive about this guidance. I think it's a clear demonstration of the International Sustainability Standards Board on the one hand and EFRAG on the other, really working together for the benefit of preparers. I think that this is giving some clear guidelines, a roadmap for companies working forward that have to comply with both. So let's talk about a little bit more detail. Firstly, what does this guidance actually do? Well, companies can take confidence that the ISSB and EFRAG have agreed on some common areas of their climate-related disclosures, and they have highlighted significant alignment. So now that we have an agreed list of areas of differences to watch out for, that allows companies to kind of move forward with confidence with gathering their data, preparing their disclosures, and also determining kind of their, what I like to say is their kind of accounting policies or their accounting manual backing all of this up. But we've got to be a little bit realistic here. So secondly, what does this not do? So it shows that there can be significant synergies. But really importantly, it does not mean that there are zero differences beyond what's been highlighted in the guidance. More potential differences are absolutely going to emerge as implementation progresses. But how I look at this is that the standard setters have done their part. Now it's really our turn. It is incumbent on all of us to interpret the standards during implementation such that we actually realize the goal of maximum interoperability in practice. So what's a real difference in the requirements versus kind of what's really the same thing said with slightly different words? And Bryce, I know people will get bored because I've really have said this before, but we have a 600 page GAAP comparison, which is IFRS accounting standards versus US GAAP. And I really, really do not want to be in the same place with sustainability reporting in 5 years' time.
Yeah, I can't imagine many people would want to be. I've looked at that interoperability guidance as well. I find it very helpful. What I really like about it is for a company that's approaching the CSRD, for example, and working through ESRS implementation, it provides you with what to look out for when moving to the ISSB standards or vice versa. It has a chapter that's the vice versa of that as well. So I think that is very helpful. Okay, Julie, sticking with you here for one more question and staying with the theme of international requirements. Recently, we know that the CDP published their 2024 questionnaire, and that includes some important changes from the 2023 version. So do you mind walking us through what some of those changes are?
Yeah, Bryce, this is something that I was really watching out for, you know, going on for a year. So the big news is for everybody that the CDP's 2024 questionnaire actually incorporates the ISSB's International Climate Standard, IFRS S2. So practically what that means for the questionnaire is that it includes some new questions, it has some updated questions, and in addition, it has got guidance to help companies understand where and how they can provide this additional information to align with IFRS S2. So for companies that routinely submit a CDP questionnaire, and that's a lot of US companies, this is really going to require some thought and preparation. So the kind of window for reporting opens in June. Next up, the CDP is working on alignment with ESRSs, the EU standards. And they actually mentioned on a recent webcast that they have a CSRD or an EU reporting tool under development. So no more news at this stage, but it's definitely on our radar and we're watching what happens. So all of this is a really big deal. And I think this goes to one of our major themes in this ESG reporting series. This is yet more evidence of how everything is slowly, slowly coming together. And in effect, the walls are closing in. And for all companies, we are not just talking about registrants, other public issuers here, Bryce.
And Julie, that's a really great way and a great message for us to end with. So thanks, everyone, for your time today. Thanks, Julie and Anita, for joining me. We'll be back with you soon for updates in this space. And we're also going to dive a bit into how climate risks are impacting developments in the financial reporting space as well. So thanks again for listening and speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more in-depth ESG-related financial reporting developments, analysis, and podcast episodes, type into your browser visit.kpmg.us/ESG reporting and be sure to subscribe today.